Blacks and Latinos are losing economic ground, according to the National Urban League's recent report, The State of Black America. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The report called One Nation Underemployed, Jobs Rebuild America, found African Americans are twice as likely as whites to be unemployed. And the report noted the biggest obstacles to equality, empowerment, and mobility are jobs, access to a living wage, and wealth parity. So how is that achieved? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We will discuss the state of Black America with our guest, Dr. Walter Farrell, a professor of social work at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, a former University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee professor where he taught in the School of Education. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Glad to be with you.
Well, tell us your read of the National Urban League's State of Black America report.
Well, it follows historical trends. There has always been a sizable gap, mostly 2-to-1, between black and white unemployment. But what is somewhat surprising, but not really so, is the gap between African-American and Latino unemployment. And that's not necessarily a positive for the Latino community because many of the jobs they do hold, although there is an edge, are the lowest wage jobs in the economy. So having a higher rate of employment as compared to African-Americans doesn't necessarily translate into significant income gains for the overall community.
Yeah, the report in essence is saying that African-Americans and Latinos are losing economic ground when compared with whites in the areas of employment and income, and they include underemployment there too, as the U.S. pulls itself out of the Great Recession. So you're saying that this is no big surprise. This has been going on forever.
Oh yes, since they started the State of Black America National Urban League report 38 years ago. So this is not new.
Yeah. So I mean, they say that the answer is jobs. Is that it?
Yes, the answer is jobs. I think the answer is also increasing the minimum wage, and not just jobs, but the preparation for jobs, because the economy is changing. We've moved dramatically from a labor-intensive economy to an information-intensive economy. So that means we have to do something particularly with K-12 education, that we have to improve it, and we are not improving it, although we claim to be making strides via the new so-called education reforms, corporate charters, vouchers, and the like.
Yeah. Well, so what sorts of reforms would work, would be better for K-12 education?
I think we've got to invest in the public schools. I know there is a national storyline pushed by the right that we already spend too much money for K-12 education, and that the unions are being overfed, the teachers don't care about the children, and all we need is a qualified teacher in front of every classroom. Well, the reality is that the statistics that you noted at the beginning of your show, when you have sizable unemployment, and my African Americans versus white is 2-to-1, in Madison, Wisconsin, it's almost 4-1.
Yeah, what's going on in you know, a progressive Madison, Wisconsin, that it's even worse?
There you have an income 4.4% of whites unemployed as compared to 18.5% of African-Americans. So you got some other things operating, and some of them have to do with structural barriers of discrimination. A lot of it has to do with the education differential. But as I noted earlier, when you have high levels of employment, that cascades down a hill and causes family instability, neighborhood dysfunction, crime and violence, and all of those impact children coming to school. Because of that high level of unemployment and underemployment, many kids come to school hungry. And even when we have free breakfast and free lunch, they still don't get a stable meal consistently at the end of the day when they're back home. And so you have all of these factors contributing to the education gap. Now, the recent data that I've read is reported in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I went online to pull up the report. They say after all of this hullabaloo, after 22 years, voucher schools are doing no better than public schools, although they get to screen their students to a degree and dismiss them at will. So that reform on its face has not worked. And I think if we invest in public schools and at the same time invest in communities, which is equally as important because the two go hand in hand, then we're likely to move toward closing this gap. But what we have done as a nation is to continually look for the silver bullet, especially in times of crisis. So we can do this, and that solves the education problems with, you know, privatization of public education. You know, if we want peace in the Middle East, we invade Iraq. And it doesn't work. And then when it doesn't work, we just move on to something else. And oftentimes still push the same policy, like the same people who led us into Iraq and said that would solve the problem were trying to lead us into Syria. And the American public said no, so we are not there. And so the American public needs to come to a conclusion that if we're going to improve the educational situation and the job situation and the overall economic and social situation for an increasingly diverse society, that we have to invest in education, we have to invest in communities, and that will put us on the path.
The report also says that one in every three African-American children or teenagers are living in poverty, that 30% practically. That certainly can't help. How did this number get so high?
Well, you know, as we go back to the unemployment and the underemployment, and we keep trying to dismiss that as a variable, you know, and many people, and I am on the ground all the time, talking and observing and interacting with people in economically distressed communities, people of all racial and ethnic backgrounds. And many of them are trying to do the right thing. Sometimes they make poor decisions, like we had the situation where the young woman went for a job interview and left her kid in the car. And the kid, had been in there much longer, might have died. Well, she was trying to abuse the kid. She was trying to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's going to get punished for that in the criminal justice system, and certainly she needs some counseling or whatever. But the issue is there were no supports to facilitate her getting a job. And that's about investing in communities, investing in people, rather than cherry-picking certain issues that we're going to focus on that, and that will solve the other problem when we haven't addressed the other problem. Poverty, which has increased in the African-American community, which is 2 to 3 times as high in the African-American community and the Latino community as compared to the white community, that's a problem. And we have to address that independently of all the other issues. So if we are trying to create more corporate charter schools, bringing on vouchers, and we let poverty grow or stay at the same level, it's going to impact what's happened in school. And now there's a storyline going around from the educational reformers where poverty doesn't matter. Poverty is always going to be here. So what we have to do is put a qualified teacher in front of the kids, and teachers can solve that. They can't solve a problem in 8 hours a day that persists over a period of 24.
We are discussing the state of Black America, the National Urban League's annual report released this month, with Walter Farrell, who is a professor of social work at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And we're welcoming your questions about the state of Black America and what can be done to make it better. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It is now 21 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, April 16th. We are talking about the state of Black America with Walter Farrell, a professor of social work at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He was a professor at UW-Milwaukee, where he taught in the School of Education. And Professor Farrell, do you miss the snow of Wisconsin?
Not at all. You guys have had a rugged winter. Glad I'm not there.
Yeah, it's been a rough one in poor northern Wisconsin. Another foot, maybe. Oh my goodness. We have a number of callers who have questions or comments on this. Let's go to Keith in Beaver Dam. Hello, Keith.
Yes, I got a question for the good doctor. A little statement too. I grew up on a farm and worked directly with my dad every day. He taught me responsibility, accountability, working hard, being, you know, and I read reports about in the Black community, fatherless homes, and even now, you know, the white Hispanic community also with fatherless homes, and that was directly related to the poverty and the struggles of the Black community and the Latino community?
Yes and no, and I noticed recently, and here we go again with some of the explanation. I know recently Wisconsin Congressman, former VP candidate Paul Ryan, indicated that the problem was all of these African-American males in inner cities who don't work and have no aspiration to work. Now, as you pointed out, families, dysfunctional families, do contribute to the development of a youngster. But every time there's a job fair, and there have been job fairs in Milwaukee, hundreds, if not thousands, of young African American males between ages of 18 and 35 show up to try to get these job interviews. And few are hired, but you go to Chicago, you could take that to any large city, and the same pattern persists. So there is some responsibility, but at the same time that the communities that existed when you were a kid and when I was a kid, a change, because you had a higher proportion of stable families who taught the values that your father taught you, that my father taught me, because those were pervasive values in a society where the overwhelming majority of families of any racial and ethnic background were two parents, whether they were working poor, middle class, rich, whatever. that was the pattern, and the values were transmitted. When you have families racked by poverty, neighborhood dysfunction, you don't have those same values coming forward. So certainly we need to have good values, and I totally agree with you on that. But on the flip side of that, we need to have availability of jobs. And no matter what your values are, if jobs are not available, then you can't succeed. You know, I'm a college professor, done well in my life. My father dropped out of the school, dropped out of middle school, not high school, middle schools, but he had a strong work ethic. And he worked and educated, sent all of his five kids to college out of his pocket. But the reason he was able to do that, he worked a number of jobs, but jobs were available that he could cobble together, and more than one of them paid a family-supporting wage. And so he encouraged me to go to college. He said, because I don't want you to have to struggle is the way I struggle, although we've made it, because the values he communicated to me and the values your father communicated to you are the kinds of values that we need to be pervasive in contemporary society. But at the same time, we need to have job availability, and we don't have the jobs available to any sector of the economy that we used to. For instance, a large number of college graduates this May will not find jobs for the next 6, 7 months or a year. Or if they do find jobs, they will be jobs that they did not require a college degree. And then they will have thousands, tens of thousands of dollars of debts piled on them. And so that was the point I was making earlier. We need to be operating on two fronts. We need to operate on the personal responsibility front. We need to operate on the values front. And we need a society that develops a pathway to jobs. And then we need to have jobs at the end of that pathway.
Pete in Elkhorn is with us now. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Professor. I kind of am calling about the same thing that the guy that grew up on the farm said. You sound like you came from a great family. And when I think it would serve African Americans better if instead of first you place the blame on corporate America and white people, that you take charge of it yourself like your dad did. And you know, even right now you said, do you think it's, I forget what Joy asked you, do you think it's the government's fault or black community himself, and you kind of said both right away. I mean, first of all, it should be, yes, we need to take charge. We need to do what my father taught me. I just think it would be served better. I mean, so many people see people in the inner city with these free phones and they brag about like they're getting free stuff. And then you kind of see where people start to think that African Americans are lazy. If that's all, especially a guy out in a farm somewhere that doesn't live in Milwaukee, you know, that's all they see, and then they get resentful for all the other excuses. And I'm not saying there isn't other excuses. Of course there is. I mean, there's a lot of prejudice. There's a lot of, things that need to be changed. But I just think you would be much better served if a strong black guy like you took charge and said, we need to change. You know, we need to work five jobs like my dad did, if that's what you have to do. Well, or, you know, get that great work ethic back.
What's your reaction to all this, Professor?
Well, I think that's an easy path to success. But we have to get back to the point that the jobs available to support a family are just not there. They're not there in large numbers. So it's not so much I'm blaming the corporate community or saying the government has a responsibility. The fact of the matter is that the government, because the government is we the people, and so all of us have to have a responsibility. But you can't take charge of a situation you don't control. For instance, there are hundreds of thousands of people of all backgrounds who were lured into these balloon mortgages in the subprime market. You know, they were told that even though you make $28,000 or whatever, you can afford this amount of house. Now, the realtors were promoting that because they could get the mortgage, roll it over, securitize it, and sell it off. And it was like a pyramid scheme, which it was. And then when it collapsed, and millions of people in every state lost their homes, were reduced to a lower standard of living. At the same time, because these same entities were too big to fail, the government spent nearly $1 trillion rescuing them without penalty. And they did nothing to the individuals who had been victimized.
Let me hold you there, Professor Farrell, as we have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up. And then we'll continue talking about the state of Black America after we check the latest news. We are discussing the state of Black America this hour and what it will take to make it better. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Wednesday, April 16th. The report called One Nation Underemployed, Jobs Rebuild America, says the biggest obstacles to equality are jobs, access to a living wage, and wealth parity. And we are discussing this with our guest and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. The report found that African Americans are twice as likely to be unemployed as whites, and it found that Blacks and Latinos are losing economic ground compared to whites in terms of employment and income during the recovery from the Great Recession. We are discussing these issues with Dr. Walter Farrell, a professor of social work at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He was also a professor at UW-Milwaukee, where he taught in the School of Education. Let's go to another call. Don in Norwalk is with us. Hello, Don.
Hi. I just want to first of all, thanks for taking my call. And secondly, I just want to agree with your guest. I think it's essential that there's like a two-pronged, you know, attack on this problem. You got to have the values on one hand, but the pressures of, you know, not having any job at all and you know, having to try and figure out how to pay the rent and all that kind of stuff, that can really squish good values. You know, you got to have some kind of actual material support as well. And this problem is, I think it's more concentrated with blacks for a variety of, you know, social reasons and stuff. But it's the whole country's problem right now. You know, our values are withering because, you know, jobs have been exported. And, you know, here we are. You know, everybody's wondering why things are falling apart.
Yeah, it's a problem for the whole country, Professor Farrell.
Oh, I certainly agree with Don, and I'm pleased that he agrees with me. But and I think all of the callers who called in prior to Don, you know, are well-intentioned, as I think people want to solve the problem. I think there is a commitment among Americans in general to solve the problem. But you can't take it out of the context of the reality. I'll give one example, which I think underscores Don's point. When Mitt Romney lost the presidential election to Barack Obama, much of it was tied to the fact that it was documented that, you know, Bain Capital, which, you know, I don't begrudge him his success, much of their success was attributed to the fact that they helped export jobs overseas. but that's fine. I wouldn't say that was the whole problem. But what really slammed him in the last weeks when he made that comment about all of these people out here who don't want to work and the 47% will never vote for me and whatever. Those comments caused working class white women who make it under $50,000 a year to move like a tsunami toward voting for President Obama, more than 55% of them. Prior to that statement, 6% of them had been solidly for Mitt Romney because they were conservative. They believed in hard work. Many were working two and three jobs, you know, trying to support their family. And when he made those statements, they saw, well, he's talking about me. I'm out here struggling every day, and he has no regard or respect for what I'm doing and trying to do for my family. And they switched because they saw that his values about the economy, about providing job opportunity, were not consistent with their values. And so that's where we have that mismatch, if you will, that a large number of Americans want what's best for everybody. They believe everybody should work hard. People shouldn't be loafing. But that's way exaggerated. You know, the people get free phones from the government over under government policies with some kind of, yes, but not enough to matter. That's not the reason we don't have jobs in the ghetto or the inner city. The reason we don't have jobs in low-income communities is because jobs have been taken out of low-income communities.
I
lived in Milwaukee for 21 years, and from 1978 to 1999, when I left, more than 300 jobs had been moved out of 300,000 jobs have been moved out of Milwaukee in the manufacturing community. And so jobs are not available for a large segment of a community that is becoming disproportionately populated by people of color.
Well, you know what troubled me about the caller who relayed the story about the free phones is he said, you know, we all hear about the blacks who are bragging about getting their free phones. And well, I don't think I've ever heard that in my life, and I don't know where that even came from.
Well, that gets, it'll be fair to the caller. It gets promoted. That was Mitt Romney's statement after he lost. He said, well, the reason that Obama got reelected because he gives people stuff.
Right.
You know, and that's that, and free phones, all of this stuff. Because and initially he had Social Security, Medicaid, all of that in that, which benefits all Americans. But it's the kind of, false statement that is promoted on conservative TV networks and sometimes on the so-called progressive networks like CNN. And when people hear this over and over again, because most people get their information from the broadcast media today, unlike in earlier times when everybody read the newspaper or got more factual data and or what's out on the internet. Because I was having an ongoing debate about my with one of my conservative friends, and she would write me and she said that, Walter, you ought to look at this and what blacks are doing here. And she cited these sources. She said, well, I found this in Wikipedia. And I said, well, Martha, it's going to be difficult for me to debate with you because you're basing your argument on a source that nobody accepts as reliable overall and objective, because anybody can post anything on Wikipedia that they want to post.
Right,
and I invite you to post.
Yeah, to clarify, I did. I've heard politicians and media sources talking about these stories, but to just have this paint a broad brush that blacks are bragging about getting free phones is a generalization, to say the least.
No question, but it's something that the in the elite, the 1% in this country, who control an increasing share of the wealth, that's the story they want out there. And they put it out there, and they have billions of dollars to promote that message. They have a bevy of consultants and think tanks to put that message out. And so when the average citizen hears it, they say, well, it's coming from this place, it's coming from this think tank, the Bradley Foundation, the Heritage Foundation, so it must be true. Yeah. And many of these individuals have had an experience where they grew up, worked hard, and succeed. They say everybody should be able to do that. And they're not aware of the fact that the environment in which they grew up no longer exists. You know, because you don't have the job availability that you used to have. When I came to Milwaukee, African American males had labor force participation was well over 60%. When I left, the labor force participation was less than 30. Now, why was that? Because when I came there, the factories, although in decline, were still booming. Alice Chalmers went out of business while I lived in Milwaukee. The beer companies went under. Started to, at least Schlitz was just going under. But Pabst Blue Ribbon, and so all of these jobs that paid family supporting and middle class wages just disappeared, mm-hmm. and they weren't replaced by anything except fast food outlets. And the number of jobs available in those entities did not rival the manufacturing jobs that left. And so look at that part.
Let me jump in because we're at break time, but we will take more of your calls, your questions, your comments for Walter Farrell, professor of social work at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, talking about the National Urban League's annual report on the state of Black America. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the state of Black America, the Urban League's annual report that is subtitled One Nation Underemployed, Jobs Rebuild America. Talking about it with Dr. Walter Farrell, who is with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, previously with the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Let's go back to the phones. Joe in Appleton is with us. Hello, Joe.
Hi.
Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick comment and then a question for Dr. Farrell. I train in a large printing facility. I often train people coming in. And it seems as though we try to recruit African American. We want a a diverse community at the where we work. And it seems as though when I work in the production end of it, there's plenty of office jobs, but I work in the production end. And when these people come in, meaning all different races, I train them, and it seems as though the African American that we do have that come in, they work for a short time, and they seem to be working out. They seem to be kind of inclined. They seem to be working out well, and then they just stop working. They just quit. And then, on the other hand, we have a large age community that work where we work, and they seem to just flourish. And it seems I talk to them, few of my friends that are Asian, and they say that they put a very big importance on their family and education, and that's brought them from in the same state that seemed like African Americans were in at one time to a So just the opposite end of the spectrum. They seem to be the highest paid and most educated group right now, including Caucasian, depending on what study you read.
Back to the African Americans who are working out well at the job you train them for, Joe, and then they leave. Does your company find out why they're leaving?
They do call sometimes to try to get an exit interview, and they don't get any response back. I don't know why. If they seem to want to start at, in the production area, you will start at the lower end. You start as a press helper. You do odd jobs, and you work your way up really the top-paying job besides management in the production facility is the press operator who runs the press and takes care of the daily, the people on the press. So I don't know if they don't want to start at the bottom and work their way up, or I guess I just don't know why. I talked to some of them, and I've tried different techniques in the training, and it seems as though they love it. They like the job. They like the opportunity to get paid, and then they just one day they just stop coming in. We don't know why.
Well, what do you have to say about that, Professor Farrell?
Well, you know that and I accept Joe at his word. That happens, and that could be a function of several things. It could be a function of the attitudes the African Americans bring to the job. Certainly, we have to consider that, but also it could be a function of the workplace environment. So we don't know what the level of comfort that these individuals feel in the workplace environment. And when you compare it to the Asian community, Asians as a group have a history of strong family structures. Many of them who are immigrants, as is the case for immigrants from Africa, Mexico, Ireland, and the like, immigrants come to the U.S. with a strong work ethic and a belief that they can succeed here. And so you're getting, as far as immigrants populations of any background, you're getting those with the greatest aspiration and those with the strongest work orientation leaving their homeland because they're coming here because they believe they can do better. But without understanding the work context, I'm at a loss. But I'm certain the attitudes are part of it. You got to look at the work environment, and it would be very helpful if you could gather some exit interview data to determine what stimulated the consistent departures from the company.
Yeah, the National Urban League's report does talk about raising the minimum wage or establishing a living wage, and is calling for that as one way to make the state of Black America better. Do you agree that that's an important component?
I think raising the minimum wage is one component, it could be a contributing factor. But without the improvement of education, investing in communities, the government using its state and local, using its resources to reduce crime, drug use, drug abuse, all of that, without a number of factors aimed at changing this problem and bringing in jobs, and preparing children from K through 12 to be ready attitudinally and skill-wise, the soft skills and the hard skills for the job, and then having jobs there. And so it will take a series of initiatives and not just one. And so the minimum wage, although I feel it's important, will not solve the problem. The education reforms alone will not solve the problem. I think that the investment ought to be in public education because that's where the overwhelming majority of the children are. And I'm not decrying private schools or parochial schools or anything of the kind, but the majority, over 90% of all of the children who go to school in this country go to public schools. So we need to improve them because there's not going to be enough of the other kinds of schools to take them in. And thirdly, we need to have industries invested in America. Some of them are coming back to America, like Apple and the like, because they say their profit margins are not better now with the changes in other parts of the world. So we need to focus on look at the problem in America, lack of jobs, devastated communities, dysfunctional communities, and say, well, all the elements we have to improve, and you have to do that in tandem and not doing one and saying this will solve the problem.
There was a listener on Facebook who posted, as long as the majority of African Americans keep electing Democrats, the state of Black America is going to be poor.
Well, that is the Republican line, and I understand this is politics, and when Republicans say stuff or conservatives say stuff, here again the simple answer: if we're going to elect, let's say we elect more Republicans, will that mean that the voter suppression laws that have been recently promulgated in Wisconsin will abate? Will there be less voter suppression where African Americans and low-income people and elderly people, they find it more difficult to vote? And so that is sheer folly in my position. Now, are the Democrats perfect? No. I voted for Republicans in my past, because I thought they were the better candidate on policy. But overall, if we look at the policy of the Democrats as opposed to the policy of Republicans and independents, for the majority of Americans, they are consistent with the values of the majority. That's why we had an African-American president win two terms in succession in terrible economic times, because the majority of Americans, not Black people, not brown people, not Asians, not Native Americans, but the majority of Americans, and the majority of Americans who voted in the last election were white, they felt that they had a better shot at improving their quality of life than selecting the other guy.
We have just a minute, less than a minute to go. There was a survey that was done that said, despite the dismal numbers in this report, that the majority of African Americans are more optimistic about their future standard of living than whites. Are you optimistic?
Well, I think that the standard of living for Americans is in decline. And until we get a grip on the control, and it's been exacerbated with the recent Supreme Court decision on unlimited contribution to campaign, to political campaigns at every level, until we get a grip on what the oligarchy, the 1% of Americans, control, all of us are in danger.
We have to leave it there. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.